This is B2B Influence, the podcast where smart marketers get sharper. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. And each week, I sit down with the voices redefining B2B success, the marketers scaling what works, the disruptors testing what's next, and thinkers changing how brands grow. You'll hear quick, actionable insights from data-driven targeting to full funnel strategies, plus real stories of how industry game changers are driving measurable impact. And here's something extra. When we hit 25,000 subscribers, we're giving away a free customer analysis to one lucky listener. Just subscribe and leave a comment to enter. If this episode hits home, sharing it with a colleague or subscribing is the best way to support the show and help us spotlight even more bold thinkers. Let's dive in. Welcome, everyone. This is Paula Keoki. I'm the CEO of Outward Media, and this is the B2B Influence Podcast. Today, we have Nikos Limanis. He is the Senior Marketing Strategist at Luxid, that's spelled L-U-X-I-D. And he's going to share how he helps global brands turn marketing into practical growth engines. No small feat. We're going to dive into how he simplifies complexity, aligning strategy with outcomes, and adapting to evolving buyer behavior, which is ever more complex now than it's ever been, in my opinion. So welcome. So,
thank you.
Nikos, you've spent nearly two decades guiding both B2B and B2C brands across the US and the EMEA. What's one of the core principles that you believe applies universally, regardless of region or market type, when it comes to marketing that truly drives revenue?
Really important question, isn't
it?
I would say that, I mean, there are obviously some marketing fundamentals that, like knowing your audience, understanding their needs, having a consistent experience across touch points, making best use of data and technology. They apply regardless, right? Regardless of region, regardless of business size, type, industry. But there's another constant that I always come back to. And it's less about what drives revenue and more about what makes best use of the budgets and the resources and the time and that you have. And that's make sure you truly understand your challenge before you start to try and solve for it. And what I mean by that is if brands come to us for all sorts of reasons, often because they're not happy with the current situation or they haven't got the resources to do what they need to, but usually they come with a challenge. But more often than not, at least equally often, I would say, the challenge they come to us with is more a manifestation of a symptom rather than the underlying challenge. Mm. So, for instance, a pretty simple and recent example, a new customer came to us and said, look, we've got trouble converting leads. Doesn't matter what we do, our sales team just cannot convert them. We need a better nurture program to get them sales ready once they're into the process. That was true. They did need a better nurture program, but actually the underlying problem wasn't with the nurture program. It was with the quality of the leads themselves.
I was just thinking that.
Right. I mean, it sounds obvious, right? And as a marketer, that's probably where our heads would go to. But because of the structure of their organization and the way that they think, it was like, well, we can't convert. It's a conversion issue. And it didn't take long. A bit of a deep dive, a few conversations, and it became abundantly clear that the lead scoring wasn't right, the qualification process wasn't right, and dealing with that was a more appropriate initial response than just trying to kind of figure out how we change the nurture. And that misdirection comes in all formats. Mm-hmm. Here, we need to rebrand, we need a new website, we need a new CRM system. And until you really identify the right problem to solve, you're kind of just putting on a band-aid and potentially wasting a lot of time and money doing that. Mm-hmm.
Well, that requires you really digging under the covers then, because as you mentioned, the symptom to the problem, it's almost like, with your health, there's a symptom, but what's really the underlying problem, right?
Right.
That sounds like you're very extremely consultative with your clients. And I notice you have some really big brands. So
yeah.
As clients,
yeah.
I appreciate that because that's really moving towards being a partner versus a vendor.
Right. And sometimes with the bigger brands, it's harder to do than with the smaller brands. Mm-hmm. When you do have siloed organizations that maybe don't speak to each other as much as they should. And getting people into the same room to discuss a challenge is usually what makes that click point happen. And you realize
people saying different things. And then.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Excellent. So you've written about staying ahead of change. How are shifts in buyer behavior influencing how B2B marketers build trust and brand equity today, in your opinion?
So again, massive question, and I think
Not going to give you easy ones
I
either.
love it. I love it. I'm ready to answer, Paula. I would say, I mean, I've been doing B2B marketing for, well, over 2 decades now, and it's always been changing, right? Buyer behavior, buyer preferences, channels, etc., have always been changing. But right now, I think we're at a tipping point where there's big changes happening that we can't ignore. We can't bury our heads in the sand about. And there's two things that are happening at similar times that I think are affecting that. The first is around technology. So, as B2B marketers, if you look at the technology or the advances in technology that we've been gifted over the past 15 to 20 years, content management, CRM, marketing automation, CDP, real time ad targeting, intent data, all these things, they've all kind of been skewed in helping us do that standard marketing, goal of getting the right message in front of the right person at the right time. They've been skewed at helping us sell. Now, what's happening right now, and I can't believe we've gone this many minutes without mentioning AI, but going to talk about AI, probably a record for any marketing podcast for the last year or so. AI is different because it is the big technological advance that we're going through right now, and it is giving us massive benefits as marketers and as brands. But the difference is it's giving just as much benefits to our consumers. So whereas those other technologies, yeah, we maybe allowed for a more personalized experience for our buyers, ultimately, the idea was still to get us to sell better to them. AI, in very real terms, allows our buyers to circumvent some of our tactics, our more traditional tactics. And that changes the way, it changes fundamentally how the experiences and the relationships they're going to have with brands. If you think about the nature of discovery changing, people are going to AI to ask questions, request recommendations, do their research. And as agentic AI becomes more accessible, more commonplace, better understood, they're going to do even more of that process directly with AI and not with us. And that's going to make it very hard for marketing sales teams to keep grasping onto that outdated concept of a linear funnel that's controlled by the vendor. When the journey becomes more cryptic, more messy, harder to track, it means no one wants to fill out our forms anymore. No one wants to access our website even anymore. So how does that affect and influence the way that we build relationships with our consumers? So that's point one. I mean, that's bad enough on its own, but if you look beyond that, there's a second big change happening at the same time, and it's a little bit more of an organic change. Well, I mean, it's literally organic change. So a new generation of buyers are starting to mature into B2B decision-making roles. There was a stat from this year from a Forrester study that says that now 71% of B2B decision makers are now either millennials or from Gen Z, and that's up from 64% last year. And that's a big enough jump.
I
This
know.
has been happening a lot, right? And even 2/3 of buyers involved in purchases over $1 million are now in these generations as well. So that's massive in itself. And I think the qualifying factor there isn't necessarily that all these guys are in C-suite roles or senior roles, but the size of the buying group continues to expand as well. I think it's 20 people now is the average B2B buying group size, whatever that means. But a lot of those millennials are in their 30s and 40s. The Gen Z people are in their 20s at least. They've at least some of the older Gen Z have got 6 to 7 years in industry at the moment. They're taking up positions in operation, finance, IT, procurement, HR, engineering, depending on the industry. And we're not just selling to the CEO here. The CEO is asking these people for their expert opinion on purchasing decisions, and they're the ones we need to engage to get to the final decision, especially when we're talking about technology or more technical products and solutions that they're the experts making the decisions. So that's a consideration itself. And there's a danger of lumping millennials and Gen Z into one bucket, which I think is unfair. It's done too often. It's
I
not been
agree with it.
useful.
I agree with it.
Absolutely not. I mean, the point really is that many of our traditional marketing sales practices are designed for Gen X and older buyers. And while older millennials like myself, just we can stomach that. just we can stomach that. But the younger decision makers, they just won't. They've grown up doing their research online. They go to social media. They go to peers to form opinions. They're buying online. They don't want to be sold to. They don't want to speak to a salesperson until they're ready to. It's simple as that. And they're also a generation, and this is where brand becomes important. They're a generation where that potentially value ethics more than some of their predecessors and have a different
Absolutely.
default setting when it comes to brands. So they don't give trust by default. Millennials are more likely to. Gen Z are wary by default. Trust needs to be earned, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But if you
It
make
puts
them
the
jump through
onus on
hoops.
the brand to be able to speak on that at the, to that level.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if you're making them jump through hoops and speak to salespeople, they're just going to look elsewhere. The attention span is not there. And I think coming back to your original question about how do you then build trust and equity, I think you have to start looking at every touch point, even if it's not in control, in your control, sorry, and more of them won't be. Every touch point is an opportunity to either enhance or erode brand trust. So you've got to become comfortable with the fact that you can't control the journey in the same way as we used to. So
So
consistency
it
of message.
takes years to build a brand
Absolutely.
integrity, and then it could take a day to wipe it out.
For sure, yeah, for sure. And it's even harder if you don't get to control the message anymore and just control the narrative around your own brand. And granted, that's been the case, especially since the advent of social media more and more. Now it gets even harder. So consistency and proof are vital. And this is where I think it's a good thing because we're moving towards a proof-based marketing over persuasion-based marketing world. I think that's what AI looks for. That's what the LLMs look for in value in the recommendations. That's what the emerging decision makers are looking for as well, proof over persuasion. And I think to really get to grips with it, brands, they just, you can't bury your head in the sand and wait to start feeling the pain. You've got to start looking at the options now and evolving now. It's going to happen different in different industries. Different time scales is going to look different. And some things will remain the same, but a lot's going to change.
So is that like proof of a persuasion? I like that. I'll be using that.
You're
I'll give you a footnote.
welcome.
So proof in terms of who the company is and what and the product or both.
Both, for sure, both. Yeah, I think. You in the past you could I mean people talk about greenwashing, sustainability washing, however you want to put it. I think now it's not just what you say, you have to back it up in everything you do. It's not just what you do and how you do it and the quality of products, it's how you do business. And I think to be able to really understand that is hard. How you're perceived is hard because you can have the best intentions, but I think brands really need to start looking at how they measure sentiment, how they understand sentiment around their brand, understand the share of voice and the perception of their brand in the marketplace, not just by people, but also by the LLMs themselves. So how is AI portraying your brand? And how is it portraying you within the conversation around your subject matter in your industry when people are going directly there?
Now
I think that's a good starting point.
you're the first one to bring that up. How the LLMs are assessing the brand. Is there any way to help with the LLM? Do you know? I don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's elements of SEO, GEO, as people are starting to gravitate towards now with generative, that are still similar in practice. So, providing the right content, providing that people, search engines, LLMs are going to pick up. But I think a really useful practice is to go in and start asking questions, be quite methodical about it, start asking questions of the different LLMs and see how your brand is perceived and start to track that, how it changes over time, how potentially putting out new content changes how it perceives you over time. Again, like SEO, there's no silver bullets,
But
but it's about quality and proof.
it's important, and I think that's great advice. That's a big takeaway today.
Awesome. That was an early one as well. Great.
So, like when you guys talk about long-term partnerships, so what does that really mean, do you think, from an agency perspective, client perspective relationship today? And how do you make space for experimentation when brands are often under really short-term pressure to get ROI?
More than ever, yes, especially at marketing departments. I mean, partnership's always been important for us. Most of our work comes through referral or repeat work, and that's always been the case. And I hope it will always be the case. We've had clients who've been with us for decades, and they don't stay with us because they're tied to us. They stay to us because we continue to offer value. And I think what will continue to be key in forming those long-term partnerships, even as we continue down this new road, is flexibility. So shifting the way you support the client as their priorities evolve and they grow and they change. So we've got clients who we've supported in a creative capacity, in a marketing technology capacity, in a development and data capacity, and having that ability to intelligently and responsibly kind of make holistic recommendations is really key. So and experimentation is a big part of that. Again, intelligently and responsibly experimenting, that's how we work. So if you look at it at a campaign level, for instance, relationships and trust are important, but results win out every time. Results need to keep coming, as should be the case. So being able to learn fast, being prepared to fail, but by being prepared, I don't mean accepting failure. It's building in the potential for failure into your overall plans to allow you to experiment and learn, rather than just blindly going down the same alley you've always gone down and hoping you're not going to get diminishing returns, which more and more, especially with performance marketing, is the case these days. So having that kind of transparent relationship, understanding that this is what we're going to do, you will get your results, but we're going to leave a percentage of our experimentation and innovation in whatever we do, and that's only going to be a value to you. That's how we form and maintain long-term relationships.
Well, and I think that's what brands want now is more of a partnership. It's not instead of that vendor relationships and the ones that just carry on with the typical vendor modus operandi aren't particularly well looked upon, in my opinion. The
Agreed,
fact that
yeah.
we that's the feedback we get from our clients, you're a real partner, right?
Right.
Roll,
Absolutely, yeah.
you listen to us, you come with new ideas, you're paying attention, you do the research, so it is important.
Absolutely. And after a while, you find that the guys working on the client account have often been working on it longer than the stakeholders within the company that they're working
They
with.
turn over.
And there's a value to that. There's a real value to that, seeing that evolution. Yeah.
Because I mentioned to you, we were in Dallas last week. A new person was in the room. He goes, "I didn't realize you've been doing business with us for 14 years." Yes,
There
we
you
do.
go. Yeah. We know you better than you do.
That's
Yeah.
right. We know where some bodies are buried. But anyway, your business model is very unique, the fact that you all over the world you have these partnerships that bring different things to the table, and I would imagine that you assess your client and you can bring in this one and this one to carry forward what it is that you need to execute for them, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, collaboration between our business, we call them business units, but our competence teams is absolutely key. We've got a really strong, as much as we're spread over Finland, UK, US, and various people remotely across Europe and North America, we've got a really strong ethos when it comes to collaboration. And I mean, COVID was a kind of make or break for us, and it really worked for us. As strange as that sounds, we'd already put in place a lot of the remote processes that were needed to work across offices and collaborate across offices, and it's quite an easy transition for us. And since then, we've only grown that, developed it. So yeah, hugely important.
Well, versus some companies that are saying, "Okay, everybody has to come back to the office 5 days a week," nobody wants to. So, as someone contributing to industry thought leadership, what's a marketing truth you feel is under-discussed but deserves more attention from senior marketers?
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy to talk about topics that are over-discussed for sure, but
Like, how much money are we going to make?
I think, right, exactly, absolutely. Well, there is one that comes to mind actually, and it's relevant to businesses of all sizes and all markets, and something we see a lot of. So I mentioned earlier that one of the things we do a lot of is help companies augment and transform their marketing and sales technology. So we're Salesforce partners, HubSpot partners, Adobe partners, et cetera. So a lot of work there. And what we've also seen is, as much as marketing budgets in general have been either declining or stagnating the last few years, the amount spent on MarTech is just keeps growing exponentially every year. It's insane, and it's set to do so for the next few years. But I was having a really interesting conversation with my colleague Jana in Finland a couple of weeks back. She's the head of sales marketing technology here at Luxit. And we were talking about where we've seen technology implementations fail in the past, not necessarily with clients, but with places that our clients have come from and learnings, etc. And one of the really interesting points was most of the time when they fail, it's not a technology issue, it's a human issue. And it's really, really under discussed because everybody's North Star is to become more data driven, to become better at making decisions when it comes to revenue generation. You know, whether it's to what content do I serve my audience next? How do I predict churn? Whatever. But the cultural effects of going through that change are really under discussed and under considered. So we've seen loads of examples of where companies have spent a lot of time, a lot of money in overhauling their technology stack. But then only a small percentage of that benefit ever really gets realized in the best case scenario. In the worst case scenario, the whole thing fails, and 5 years down the line, they do the whole thing again, rinse and repeat. And you know, as humans, we are generally resistant to change, right? That's
For sure.
inherent,
For sure.
especially if we perceive some kind of personal risk or danger. And often with these massive transformations, there is that perception sometimes, especially marketing and sales teams, about becoming redundant or losing power or control. And you know, like you see that lead salesperson who's been at the company for 25 years, they're the person everybody goes to for advice, for recommendations, for expertise. And you know, they perceive if it's run incorrectly that, well, this is coming in to do my job or do a significant part of my job. What's left for me? And
Yeah.
most of the time that's not the case.
Right.
Most of the time you need the two together to get the real benefit. But if you bring in the data and the technology and don't manage that person, you lose the person and
Yes.
you end up with the same or less than you
Yeah.
began with potentially. And trust is big as well. I mean, a lot of these systems, if they're implemented incorrectly or forced into an organization, the data that's being collected, processed, analyzed is done in a black box, and then recommendations come out with limited or no context, and we're expected as marketers to just take it and run with it. Fine if everybody understands where that how that's happened, why that's come out, etc. But if it's in the black box, you take something, you run with it, it doesn't work, or your expectations are not managed, you're going to lose confidence in it the next time. And gradually, if it happens more and more and more, you can stop using it. And all of that great data that's in there is coming out. There's no trust in it. And it's super important. And even from a more operational perspective, you're getting this technology in place to allow you to identify your leads better, reach your leads better, pass as marketers. And I know I'm using very much old school parlance here, but pass your leads on to salespeople. But if you're investing in technology that's designed to get you better leads, but your marketing team still has a target that equates to volume of leads, which crazily we see that mismatch all the time, why would they optimize for quality rather than volume? So you've got all this great data that's saying, hey, five amazing leads, guys, that you could convert, but well, you still need to provide 50. So here's 35 more, 45 more rubbish ones.
Yeah, but then
It
they're
kind of,
wasting, but then they're wasting their time,
right.
and then the feedback from the salespeople is this doesn't work.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think assessing cultural readiness, you know, prioritizing collaboration when it comes to these things. So making sure the right people again are in the room, sales, marketing, IT, even HR and training. And then doing it in phases, you know, so you give yourself time to embed, train, test, and then course correct if needed. But this is definitely something that's not discussed enough in the MarTech conversation.
I heard recently that most of these bigger companies have like maybe 10 platforms, and they might be using one module per platform, and it's millions of dollars.
I would absolutely concur with that from what I've seen.
So do you all consult at all on the platform side? In other words, like you have these 10, but you really only need five? Or
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of it is about consolidation. A lot of the conversations are about consolidation. And now, you know, there are some Some of the providers pretty much do everything, and there's decisions to be made about whether you lock yourself in with one vendor or you look at the kind of best of breed. Or you could do the worst thing, which is exactly what you said, and kind of just get everything and try and plug it all together without thinking about it. But
And it never works, but
it never works. It never works.
I
Right.
think that a big takeaway for me is that the fact that, and I've had other guests talk about this in the PR space, is getting everybody aligned. You know, the different groups within a company. You know, you talk about sales and marketing, you talk all of them, even all the way up to the C-suite. Is everybody aligned?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not easy. It's not
It's
easy.
not easy. It should be,
It
but it
should be.
never has been, and it
It should
probably
be.
never will be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everybody's got their little fiefdoms too, what they want to.
Right. I mean, I think the key takeaway though is to get the insights you need to make good decisions. You don't need to spend months or years and six-figure budgets, you know, doing that. That's a kind of that's past thinking, probably outdated thinking. You just need to get people to buy into getting into the room together. Usually, the information that's needed, a big percentage of it exists within the organization. It
And
doesn't need.
we're all rowing in the same direction, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
This has been great. You've given me a wealth of information. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on.
If anybody wants to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
I think LinkedIn is the best.
Okay.
So, Nikos Lamanis on LinkedIn or nikos.lamanis@luxidgroup.com. It's my
So
email.
I'm going to spell it for everybody. So that's Nikos, Nikos,
Yes.
and the last name is Lemanis.
Correct.
Having
Thank
my
you.
odd last name, I'm used to having to spell it.
I'm sure, yeah.
I figure you are too.
It's a cross we're always going to carry, isn't
But hey, at least we
it?
stand out, right? It's
Well,
not
right,
Jenny
yeah.
Smith, 5,000 of
No
them.
offense
No
the
offense to Jenny
Smiths of
Smith.
the world.
That's right. But thank you so much for being on, Nikos. This has been great.
Thank you. Have a good day.
That's it for today's episode of B2B Influence. If you picked up something new or found yourself rethinking your approach, take a second to subscribe, leave a quick comment, and share this episode with your network. And don't forget, once we hit 25,000 subscribers, one lucky listener will win a free customer analysis. Just subscribe and comment to enter. If you want to be a guest or know someone pushing the boundaries in B2B marketing, tap the link in the show notes to nominate or apply. And if you're ready to fuel smarter campaigns and more accurate targeting, check out at what we're doing at OMI.